You're listening to Security Squad, episode 3 for 2008, virtualization security, overthinking compliance, and IT budgeting in an uncertain economy.
The Hannaford thing just illustrates, if you recall the Michael Corleone quote in Godfather 2, if history has taught us anything, it's that you can kill anyone. Well, you know, if history teaches us anything, if you want to badly enough, you can breach anyone.
RSA seems to be turning into Comdex in the security industry at this point. It's turned into this giant sort of unwieldy thing.
The PCI Security Standards Council released the clarification, but they did alleviate a little bit of the confusion ahead of time. Granted, it's a month before the requirement becomes mandatory.
Welcome to Security Squad. I'm Rob Westervelt, and today we're going to talk about some of the interesting security stories in recent weeks. First, we'll talk about some of the trends that were seen last month at the RSA Conference 2008. We know that virtualization security was a hot topic. Then we'll talk about what some experts are calling the over-compliance mentality. And we'll ask, can that mentality really lead to a data breach? Speaking of compliance, a new version of PCI DSS is due out in September. The council also issued a clarification recently on web security, and we'll have more on that. And finally, we'll discuss whether the uncertain economy will cause IT budgets to shrink. We'll see if some of the members of the staff here think security budgets are really going to take a hit. Joining us today is CERT Security Executive Editor Dennis Fisher. Dennis, you recently had an interesting story about botnet research raising ethical concerns.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that have come up lately. This isn't a new phenomenon, really, but a couple of researchers who have been doing work on some of the larger botnets right now, including Storm and Kraken, have found ways into these botnets, and they found that they're able to infiltrate them and, in some cases, poison the code that these botnets are downloading from the remote servers, sort of the updates that they get, the regular updates they get from the command and control servers. And the question turns into whether the researchers should go about cleaning these bots off of users' compromised machines if they have the ability to do so. As I said, it's not a new question, but it's coming up more and more now, and researchers are sort of wrestling with it.
It's going to be something interesting. Maybe we can talk about that in a future episode. Next, Mike Momoso is joining us. Mike's the editor of Information Security Magazine, and he's responsible for the entire magazine. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rob.
Mike, what's the focus of the next issue?
Well, the May issue is about to hit mailboxes any second now, and the cover story is on software as a service and the 7 vital security questions you should ask your provider. We also got a story on change management and security and how that impacts environments, as well as another story on identity management suites. And I can clue you into next month's cover story, which is a good segue for later, which is on virtualization.
And finally joining us is Neil Reuter. Neil is Senior Technology Editor of Information Security Magazine. And I know, Neil, you recently, you know, examined security services being offered by the telecom industry. Just tell us a little bit about why the telecom industry is bolstering these services.
Well, the telecoms have always been involved in offering security services, and they're in a unique position because of the large number of customers, the huge amount of data they're handling, their position as internet service providers as well. But more recently, they've gotten into this game in a very big way, particularly look at BT's acquisition of Counterpain for services, and more recently, Verizon's acquisition of CyberTrust. And what we're seeing is services going well beyond the traditional firewall management and things like that into almost every area of security, from data loss prevention to partner compliance and a number of areas, and we'll continue to see that grow.
All right, so why don't we get started? Thousands of security pros flocked to San Francisco for RSA 2008 last month. The keynotes, they seemed to bring up some of the same messages as they did in previous years. There were a few hot topics. Mike, I know that virtualization security was one of them, and I know that you moderated a panel discussion on the topic.
It was definitely one of the big trends at RSA, and it's a lot of companies are obviously getting into virtualization for a lot of good reasons, server consolidation, power consumption savings, They don't always get into it for security reasons. Security often ends up on the back burner, and that's the debate now, how to do virtual environments safely, who should be responsible for them, the virtualization vendors or the security vendors. There's a lot of different debates and directions that this topic can go in.
What are some of the other hot topics, Dennis? What's your takeaway from RSA first, and then, you know, was there anything really revealing from RSA?
RSA seems to be turning into comdex in the security industry at this point. It's turned into this giant sort of unwieldy thing that is pretty unfocused at this point. It doesn't have a lot of the hardcore security content that it used to even just 3 or 4 years ago, which I think is sort of a natural evolution of the conference as security has become more of a business imperative and not just a sort of backwater technological discipline that, you know, hardcore geeks get into. It's much more of a business thing these days. So that's sort of a natural way for it to go. But having said that, I think it leaves a lot to be desired in terms of the technical content these days. But some of the interesting things that I saw there, along with the virtualization stuff, was I saw a presentation by some Microsoft guys, Vinny Galato and another Microsoft executive, about some of the security advances they're going to have after Vista in upcoming versions of Windows, some authentication technologies, which was interesting. And there were also a couple of interesting sessions on rootkits and some of the advanced malware that's out there these days, which is really one of the things that everybody seems to be talking about, is these really advanced threats that are morphing and changing all the time, these custom Trojans and all of this sort of black market malware that is really wreaking havoc on the internet and causing a lot of trouble for security professionals and the vendors as well.
Was that the research track? Because it seemed like a lot of people were packing into that particular track. I think
The research track was terrific. I'm glad they added that this year. I thought that was a great idea. Turned out well. They just needed some bigger rooms for it. You know, they should have been holding those in the rooms where they held the keynotes. And vice versa. You know?
So that was a new addition this year.
Yeah. This is the first year they've done that, and hopefully they'll expand it next year. I thought it turned out well. They had some good speakers there. They just didn't have the right rooms for it, I think. And, you know, the keynotes are whatever. You got to have those. You got to invite these big execs to sort of to show the flag as partners of RSA. But, you know, you're not going to get any real news or information out of those keynotes at this point.
Neil, from a vendor perspective, did you really see anything new come from the vendors? Were there that many product announcements?
I think around virtualization, one thing, there's a lot of talk about virtualization, but only a relative handful of vendors are actually really messaging and directing product in that area. You know, some IPS vendors configure soft very much. The idea is the product virtualization aware? And what does that mean? Most vendors are tending to ignore it on a technical level while talking a lot about it. Compliance is still out there, but I'm seeing a lot of discussion focused specifically on PCI. And I think that's because there's a lot of gotta-have technology around that, and that's good news for the vendors, and they're competing for scarce dollars around PCI. And finally, I'm seeing less talk about data leak prevention as such, and the hot button now is data protection. So everything from encryption to data loss prevention, you name it, is all around data protection, and vendors are trying to package and pitch their products that way.
So Hannaford Brothers Supermarkets experienced a security breach on a very large scale. We all know that. About $4.2 million credit card and debit card numbers were stolen from its systems. And the intrusion took place between December 7th and March 10th of this year. What's interesting is that Hannaford was compliant with the payment card industry data security standards. And that had some security experts scratching their heads. And Dennis, I know you've written about this over-compliance mentality.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the fact, like we talked about before, security has become much more ingrained in the business. It's not just an IT discipline anymore. It has a lot to do with the way the entire business is run. And so compliance with things like PCI and Sarbanes-Oxley and HIPAA and all these other regulations has become sort of a way of life for security folks that are technologists and not necessarily compliant. You know, they didn't get into this in order to, you know, comply with regulations. And it's not their sort of cup of tea for the most part. And what's ended up happening is a lot of the security people that I run into at conferences and at our own seminars and that sort of thing are wrestling with these compliance problems, and they're getting a lot of pressure from senior management to, you know, meet these regulations at all costs because, you know, for example, with PCI, if you don't meet the regulation, they're, you know, at some point you're not going to be allowed to accept credit cards. And, you know, that's obviously a little problem if you're running a for-profit business. So what ends up happening is they concentrate on these regulations sort of at the expense of security. And being compliant with PCI obviously doesn't mean that your network is secure.
It's going to be interesting from a legal perspective how vulnerable Hannaford is going to be from lawsuits.
Yeah, I would guarantee that any lawyer that they hire is going to bring this up and say, hey, listen, we were compliant with PCI. We did what we were required to do. This was obviously something that, you know, nobody saw coming. Nobody had a way to defend against. We're not liable.
Mike, vendors always tout the compliance line with their products, so they do a lot of the time. What's your take? Do you think vendors really are hyping their products too much on the compliance line?
No, that's their job. I mean, I don't think they're to blame. I mean, the marketing is what they're supposed to do. It's compliance is, lays out a, I mean, regulations lay out a best standard, a best practices and a standard to follow. And oftentimes that's what companies should be doing all along. You can't blame a vendor for hyping their products and turning everything into a compliance solution. It's up to the company to be smart enough to see through that, recognize what they need, and buy accordingly.
How about you, Neil?
Yeah, well, obviously they're going to. This is a bonanza for vendors, and they're going to take advantage of it. I would do the same in their place, and so would you. The Hannaford thing just illustrates, if you recall the Michael Corleone quote in Godfather 2, if history has taught us anything, it's that you can kill anyone. Well, you know, if history teaches us anything, if you want to badly enough, you can breach anyone. So regardless of whether they were PCI compliant or not, or what precautions they took, somebody who is really dedicated to break in is going to break in, and if it looks too hard there, they're going to pick up someone else and steal 400 or 4 million credit card numbers from somebody else.
The PCI Security Standards Council will be coming out with the next iteration of the PCI DSS standards, and they're going to focus on clarifying wireless implementations, application security, and pre-authorization. At the same time, they just came out with a clarification on web application security. And Mike, I know you covered that in the magazine.
There was a lot of confusion over PCI 6.6, which covers web application security. Until June 30th, it is a best practice. After that point, it's going to be mandatory. The wording of the requirement is a little confusing for companies. Until they recently clarified it, they were talking about either being able to do a manual source code review, which is very expensive, very time-consuming, or whether the installation of a web application firewall was enough. The wording wasn't very clear, and then a couple of weeks ago, the PCI Security Standards Council released the clarification, which basically spelled out that either the manual source code review or the web application firewall was enough. They'd prefer to see both. But they did alleviate a little bit of the confusion ahead of time. Granted, it's a month before the requirement becomes mandatory.
It's hard to believe that the web application stuff wasn't in the original set of requirements, considering, you know, that's where a lot of credit card business is done these days, is through web applications. So that seems like a fairly large oversight. But I think it's just a case of you can't cram everything into these things all at once. It's like anything else. It's a compromise. There's trade-offs in terms of getting some things in now and then worrying, you know, getting the largest problems addressed first and then dealing with the rest of it in later revisions.
Mike, you interviewed Bob Russo, as you said, and did he talk a little bit about how the council addresses some of these ambiguities? I mean, is there a process that they have? And
not necessarily. He wasn't too forthcoming with many details. He just talked about, he just promised a clarification. He promised an update to the standard in September. I think a lot of it is done based on feedback, more probably from the vendor community than end users. I don't know how many end users they have in terms of a communications channel with those folks. But that's definitely how it happens.
What's this say about PCI DSS if web applications security wasn't really talked about, you know, in the regulations or in the standards?
Web application security, you know, web application firewalls had been a niche technology up till now. So this opens up an opportunity for vendors again. I think the fact that very few companies were actually using web application firewalls may have been the reason that it was left out initially. And as far as code review goes, if a company is not doing code review now, they're not going to start doing it for PCI. It's just much too involved and much too expensive.
And there's still ambiguities, too, over how the web application firewall is going to be configured. And there are even mentions of the types of resources that are available in-house, and how do you measure whether those resources are adequate in order to, you know, be able to tune these tools, and or, you know, whether they can employ a third party to do manual source code reviews. There's a lot of ambiguity still in there.
PCI is far more prescriptive than any government regulations in terms of what you should be doing, and there's still a lot of room for interpretation. But as with the government regulations, you'll see this evolve over time through audits, through the assessor evaluations.
We know that the direction of the economy is quite uncertain. The mortgage industry has affected the economy. Businesses are obviously impacted. And in turn, budgets are going to be impacted. And there's a possibility that IT budgets are going to be, there's going to be some belt tightening around IT budgets. Do you think security budgets will be impacted as well? Dennis?
Yeah, I would guess that they are. I think it's like anything else. You've got to take a look at, you know, it's just like your household budget. You've got, you know, rising gas prices, you've got a credit crunch, you've got all of these kind of things. So you have to take a look at everything and see where you can cut back. I just saw a survey a couple weeks ago that said that about 40% of the people that responded to the survey had seen IT security projects either delayed or canceled altogether because of budget concerns in the last 6 months. So it's definitely a problem. I think it all depends on the size of the organization and where their priorities lie.
I think what we may see is where you can identify areas that there's a discernible and guaranteed ROI. For instance, when we talk about compliance, a lot of compliance is very manual, very resource intensive. So we may see more activity still in areas like GRC tools, IT GRC tools, maybe database monitoring, things like that, that can automate processes that are costing companies a lot of money and manpower now.
You know, at the same time, some security experts have said that the impact from identity theft and the high-profile data security breaches has really shone a light on security. And security is now being intertwined into business processes in the business side of the house, that really maybe security won't necessarily be impacted directly. Mike, do you think that might be the case?
I don't know how many companies are actually very successful yet at integrating security entirely across business lines and into business processes.
Yeah.
A lot of companies still approach it as a technology issue, and that's what's held back security in a lot of instances. And now with budgets getting tightened, that situation may not be getting better for those companies.
I think some of it also might depend on where the chief security officer or CIO sits in the organization, depending on the size of the organization and how much influence he has with senior management, because some of these guys, you know, are just simply in the IT organization. They don't have any real interaction with senior management aside from having to go in and defend their budget every day or every year, or, you know, being called in when there's some problem. But if some of these more forward-thinking organizations have the CSO or the CIO on the senior management committee, or they're actually part of, you know, some other non-IT business unit where they're intertwined with the entire company and the way that they do business, then those guys might have more of a say and be able to sort of have a voice and say, listen, these projects are vital. They're mission critical. We can't afford to scrap them. You know, we need to move ahead with them. They may cost us money now, but they're going to save us money down the line in terms of headaches and things like that.
Well, that does it for Security Squad. Be sure to check out our previous podcast by going to our podcast landing page at certsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt, and for Dennis Fisher, Mike Mimoso, and Neil Reuter, have a great day.